So I've got a question for all the video game lovers out there. Are you seriously going to miss out on Alienware's biggest gaming sale of the year? I mean, these are Black Friday prices we're talking about, so it's not just another sale. I took a look, and this is some pretty big bang for your buck. You know, it's Alienware, with some of the most advanced engineering out there, with systems at the top of reviewers' lists. And what about a gift for yourself? Gift yourself a new Alienware 16 Area 51 gaming laptop. I mean, this thing's got performance at the absolute next level with Intel Core Ultra processors. And even better, you can get it during Black Friday. Plus, you can save on all kinds of displays and accessories, like the Alienware 27 4K QD OLED gaming monitor for ultimate visual fidelity. These really are incredible deals on PCs with otherworldly performance, so I'd visit alienware.com/deals soon and grab what you can before their biggest sale of the year goes dark.
This week on Retronauts, my spidey sense is tingling. Hello, everybody. Welcome once again to another episode of Retronauts. I am your host for this one, Bob Mackey, and today's episode is all about Spider-Man games. Yes, the history of Spider-Man games. Before I go on any further, let's see who else is in the room with me today. As always, we have...
Jeremy Doc Ock Parrish.
Yes, he has eight arms and they're flailing wildly.
I'm also an old scientist in love with Aunt May.
And he's also secretly the president. And I'll let you figure that out at home.
Secret?
And who else is here today?
Gary Butterfield Ham.
Butterfield Ham? Oh, okay.
The pig version of me that shows up every once in a while.
I'm getting these references, by the way. And who else is here?
Straight out of Amazing Fantasy 15, thwippity-thwip, Henry Hilbert. Hello.
So before I go any further, I want to say this is all Henry's doing, and by that I mean thank you, Henry, for doing this. I know nothing about Spider-Man, and that's not to say I dislike Spider-Man. It's just that when I was a young Bob, a young rosy-cheeked Bob getting into comics, I chose the Image comics and manga path instead of the superhero path, and that's why I'm the dark, twisted man I am today. So it's not that I don't like superheroes. It's just that I never engage with them when they could infect my brain the most, so now I just kind of don't get them. But I did see the new Spider-Man movie. I did like it, and Henry was very angry with me throughout because I kept asking questions.
It just shocked
innocent questions, Henry. Somebody needs to ask them.
It just shocked me that somebody couldn't recognize a reference to Amazing Spider-Man 33 when he froze all the rubble off of him.
I mean, I should have been summarily executed, but I'm thankful you were much nicer to me than that. But yes, Henry was great enough to put together all of our notes for today to dig up every Spider-Man game that he could find up to which – where was the cutoff point?
So the cutoff point is the Activision years. So Activision took over at 1999 and 2000. We're stopping before that because the pixel era of Spider-Man is enough. Like there are quite a lot of games.
Yeah. When you say dig up, you mean exhume. Right?
Yes.
Most of these are festering corpses.
Pretty much, yeah. I wanted to do this after I had listened to the great Retronauts East episode about Batman games.
Oh, shucks.
You had on Chris Sims, but it was one of those podcasts that made me angry because it was like, I should be there. I want to say things
How
too
come
about
you don't
Batman.
Live in Raleigh, man?
I don't want to.
I don't want to.
Fair enough.
Fair enough, yeah.
But
it's a good reason.
Direct. But though Chris Sims is right to call himself a Batmanologist, I think his term was. Like, I don't know Batman that well. I do know Spider-Man that well, though. So I felt like it was time to give Spider-Man a due, especially with there is a Spider-Man game looming. A new era of Spider-Man is beginning. The Activision era is over.
Sony's been advertising that game for a year as if it's out. Like,
yes.
Buy a PS4. You could play Spider-Man in a year.
Yeah, that Spider-Man game is being directed or produced by a former coworker of mine. Bob, did you work at Ziff Davis when Brian Intihar was there?
No.
Did he leave a little before
A little before
time?
Me, but I know he went to Insomniac. He's been there for a decade now almost. So
famous
that's awesome.
I
sat down earlier this year and thought, you know, I should sit down or I should like invest and buy a copy of every game that someone I've worked with is making. And then I realized I would be broke.
It's too many games.
It's crazy how many people from the Ziff Davis era.
All the 8-4 games too?
I mean, oh God.
Yeah.
I was just thinking like, you know, like production lead, like Hayman Sanchez is producing Call
every,
of Duty
every
now.
Call of Duty for the last like
I'm like,
5
wait,
years.
She used to like report to me. She's made something with her life and here I am.
Oh, come on, Jeremy. We are the kings
in a bank
of
vault.
The kings of podcasting.
There's no ventilation here. I bet they have ventilation at Infinity Ward.
Of course not. They're all locked in hot dungeons, forced to make those games every day.
That's true. We don't crunch.
No, we don't. We do pull-ups instead. So I want to say – I want to ask people in this room what their relationship with Spider-Man is. Of course, you heard my relationship with Spider-Man. I know him better as Spawn. But I've never read a Spider-Man comic. I never saw any of the movies until this latest one. I don't dislike Spider-Man. I think his costume is cool. I think his world is cool. But I wanted to say that if that Fox cartoon in the 90s was a better cartoon, I probably would have liked Spider-Man. I was kind of indifferent towards Batman until Batman the Animated Series. I love that cartoon. I went back to watch the whole thing again about a decade ago, and I still love it. And if that cartoon was better, I would be a Spider-Man fan. Unfortunately, it's garbage. And yeah. I know some of you probably like it. It's fine. It's fine to like things, but I did not like it. I want to know, Henry, you seem to be the biggest Spidey fan in the room.
Yeah.
What is your relationship, and how did you find him?
He probably was the first comic book character I ever really read regularly. I got into it right as Todd McFarlane's run on Spider-Man was its hottest in like 1990, 91. And then Eric Larson went in there, and then what crystallized me as a Spider-Man fan was the summer of 1992. I was off from school. I was ready to read comic books. They were celebrating Spider-Man's 30th anniversary with a ton of like hologram covers. And then when the Amazing Spider-Man 365, the 30th anniversary issue comes out, Mark Bagley, the artist, is there at my local store to sign comics, and he signs mine. I was like, oh my God, I am a Spider-Man fan forever after this. And so, yeah, since then I've read 8 million Spider-Man comic books. I've watched all the cartoons. I've seen all the movies, played all the games. And yeah, I bought my first Spider-Man game probably because I just love the comics so much and just followed from there. So yeah, I am a diehard Spider-Man fan.
Awesome. How about you, Gary? I think you're a big superhero fan, or at least are more engaged with it than me, as most people are in this room.
My relationship's really direct. He's my dad.
Oh, my God.
So just breaking here.
Peter Porker or Peter Parker? Because you're the amazing
Porker.
Gary Ham. Was
Gary Butterfield, okay. Ham, colon, Ham. So as a kid, I was much more of an X-Men fan. But because of 90s Marvel, those worlds crossed over all of the time.
Oh, yeah.
So I remember the first Spider-Man – I was familiar with Spider-Man, but the first Spider-Man comic I read was a crossover with X-Force.
Okay.
Which bleeds into your Image comics.
That's right.
You know,
I think I read a few copies of that because of all the lines and gadgets.
I think that was my very first Spider-Man comic I bought with like allowance money. It was Spider-Man 16, Todd McFarlane's final issue.
Yeah. And so I read them occasionally in the 90s, but when I had my comics renaissance kind of in the 2000s and got back into them, I read the first like 120 issues or so of Ultimate Spider-Man.
Oh, wow, okay.
Which is a really accessible kind of relaunch.
Is that the future Spider-Man?
No, you're thinking Spider-Man 2099.
Okay.
Yeah.
Why is he Ultimate though?
Okay. Therein lies the tale.
This is a new podcast.
No, it's just the Ultimate line was this attempt by Marvel to kind of sweep away continuity and retell their stories, kind of sweep away like junk. You know?
It was like what they've done with the movies before the movies.
Yeah, exactly.
Make it accessible to everyone.
DC does it every 10 years now,
yeah,
right?
Or 10 years. Yeah. Like DC
Superboy just punches reality until the comics reboot.
And then at that time, that's when, I'm fine that we're stopping with the Activision years, but I really like the Activision years of Spider-Man games.
Yeah, we could easily do a sequel on all those games.
The PlayStation games and the Spider-Man 2 for PlayStation 2 is one of, if not the best superhero game. Like, that is very fun. That era with that, like Ultimate Destruction and stuff, there was this time where it was a really great time to play Marvel superhero games.
Yeah, it was when it was a wilder time before, like, Marvel got as controlling with their – or also, like, charging too much for licensing, too, that you'd only get, like, one Marvel game every year from some company.
Like, I think now every Marvel game is a Candy Crush clone or something, or like a Clash of Clans clone or something like that.
Every once in a while, someone on my Twitter timeline posts this image. It's like, I got Vulture. And there's just a picture of Vulture. And I'm like, I don't know what that means.
I had to buy this with 500 jewels.
You want a Carnage point.
I'd rather see Vulture than some waifu from some like Granblue Fantasy or something.
Some Fire Emblem bikini waifu, of course.
Ah, no.
So, Jeremy, how about you? Like, what is your Spider-Man thing?
My relationship with Spider-Man? Well, in a former life, I was Gwen Stacy. And I loved Spider-Man until he broke my neck.
Oh, wow.
That was a controversial statement, by the way.
No, I mean Spider-Man did it in Amazing 121.
Wasn't that really his clone?
Teach the controversy, people.
No, Spider-Man was cloned like 30 issue later after the death. Jeremy.
No, so I didn't read comics, superhero comics as a kid, but I knew Spider-Man because – gather around, kids. It's Grandpa Jeremy's story time. I watched Spider-Man and His Amazing Friends when I was a kid. That was the hot cartoon when I was a whippersnapper.
The post
His Amazing Friends
80s.
Were Firestar, a character who I've never actually seen in a real comic book, and Iceman, who was an X-Man.
I'm about to say the same factoid. Yeah. That
she made the Harley Quinn move of – she did get put in comics, but afterwards. Right. They put her in it because they couldn't get a Human Torch.
And I remember like my parents had some church friends who were upset that we watched that because they thought Firestar was naked because she had like a sort of peach-colored costume.
Did they see Chitara?
She's wearing like a costume. What are you talking about? Anyway, but I mean Spider-Man was everywhere when I was a kid. You know, this was he was on 3-2-1 Contact. They had the live-action Spider-Man segment.
Was that the Electric Company or
was it like, okay, yeah, it was the Electric Company. Okay.
Yeah.
Those blend together in my mind because they were always on back-to-back.
They're all the same.
Mm-hmm. So I just always saw Spider-Man. Like I had, you know, this big plastic Spider-Man toy that was like motorized and had a little hook that came out of its arm, and you'd like hook the thing on with a string, and it would pull itself up with the motor. So you know, just like Spider-Man was everywhere.
I think we just discovered the origins of your Bionic Commando love.
Maybe
it was rooted early in your childhood.
I also had a Hulk figure that could like pull apart plastic bricks with same mechanism, but that wasn't as exciting.
That sounds great.
Yeah, so Spider-Man was just kind of pervasive in pop culture, but I never actually read Spider-Man comics outside of just like picking up a copy of Secret Wars or something every now and then until digital comics, and I sat down on an iPad and read like the first 100 issues of Spider-Man.
Wow.
I was like, okay.
Everyone has read like hundreds of Spider-Man comics in this room. This is great.
they go pretty fast. They're buttery smooth.
Yeah.
So, I don't know. Some of the Ditko ones are a little – I'm like, what's up with Spider-Man? He's kind of an ass.
Well – that's a little bit Steve Ditko.
Ditko is kind of an ass a little bit.
Steve Ditko.
Yeah.
Let's not go there.
Okay.
It's still with us, at the time of this recording anyway, still with us.
These things launch pretty late, Henry.
Still making his Objectivist and Ayn Rand fan fiction comics.
Out of like the same rent-controlled office in Manhattan he's been in for 50 years.
Let's not count our Ditkos before they've hatched. Okay. So let's begin our tale of Spider-Man games with the very first one, Spider-Man for the Atari 2600, 1982. So, Henry.
Yeah. So, well, first off with Spider-Man, just so you know, in case you really don't know, Stan Lee and Steve Ditko created him in August of 1962, Amazing Fantasy 15. So he had been around for 20 years before he got a video game, which obviously like it wasn't going to happen before 1975 or whatever anyway. But so the very first Marvel game and first Spider-Man game was the Spider-Man on Atari 2600.
Was there a licensed comic book game before this Spider-Man game?
There was Superman like 4 years earlier.
Yeah. 4 years, wow.
Yeah, the Superman one is super primitive compared to Spider-Man, no pun intended. But Spider-Man keeps it very focused of just like you do one thing in Spider-Man. You shoot a web to go up a building and avoid bombs. And if you get to the top, then it resets and you go to a new building and keep going up and up and up. And it's super duper simple. Bob found who was the developer of it.
Of course, no one was credited. But the developer for this game was a woman named Laura Nikolich. And I'll link to this interview in our show notes. But there's a great interview with her at Digital Press. Apparently, she was doing some like heavy duty programming things like programs for like nuclear reactors and things like that. She was doing important things. And I guess she stooped to making a Spider-Man video game, although this is a good video game.
Yeah, for an Atari 2600 game, it is. And the only thing Spider-Man can do in it is shoot his web. Like, they completely forget he can crawl up a building. So when, like, the web line snaps, he just falls until he shoots a new
web line. I don't think Nichibutsu had innovated the concept of climbing video games yet. Crazy Climber was still, like, a year or two away.
That's true. And I think they would have to draw two more Spider-Man sprites to get him to climb. And that'd be too much for the memory. Yeah.
And also, though, it does have another Spider-Man constant of web fluid is limited. In case you don't know, Spider-Man normally doesn't have organic web shooters. He has a mechanism in his arm, in his wrists, and they can run out. And so in this game too, you can't just swing forever. You have to use a limited amount to get to the top of what I assume is the Daily Bugle, but they can't all be the Daily Bugle. The color of the building changes every time.
It's a whole Daily Orchestra. It's a whole Daily Horn section.
They're really branching out with franchises. You can run your own Daily Bugle.
The Daily Trombone.
Yeah, like
Daily
the Trumpet.
And I think he's disarming bombs in this, set by the Green Goblin. And also, is he he's picking up the fluid in windowsills? Is that what's happening?
Yeah, there's fluid in windowsills, and the Goblin
is proprietary
just
fluid that only he knows how to make.
If it's the Daily Bugle, maybe he left it there to be found later.
Yeah. Another question for you Spider-Man fanatics. Is there a version of Spider-Man where the fluid is just in his body?
Yeah, that's happened.
I've seen that before.
That's definitely the movies, the Tobey Maguire?
Yeah.
Yeah, the movies, that was the simplification.
Wasn't Spider-Man 2099 the first one to do that?
Yeah, he had an internal, from EV. It honestly makes more sense for Spider-Man to have a mutation to shoot out webbing than that a 16-year-old invents a web fluid that no one's ever seen before.
Yeah, and I think whenever I see the Todd McFarlane drawings, it seems like it's coming out of him, not like a device. Maybe I'm wrong.
Well, no, Todd McFarlane draws web fluid like it's spaghetti everywhere. Yeah. Like there's way more than it. Everybody before him drew just
a silly string, really.
Yeah,
one of my favorite kind of after effects of the Todd McFarlane Spider-Man is that any scene he's been in would just be this big gross mess. Like I just imagine anyone walking down the street after like a fight has happened, just like, what is this?
Yeah, Spider-Man is a metaphor for puberty.
His layout philosophy was more lines equals more good, so everything would just have lines everywhere.
But this was 82, and Spider-Man was in a very traditional place design-wise.
Oh, yeah.
And there was a really cool commercial for it, actually, that has like perfect costumes for both Spider-Man and Goblin. Can we play that?
Oh, yeah. They're really good costumes, too.
I'll blow this town to smithereens. Time bombs. Try to get up there in time, Spider-Man.
Watch me cut my web, Goblin.
Watch yourself fall, Silk Slinger.
Gotta stop the bombs in time.
If I don't get you, webhead, my day of Nazis will.
Holy Hannah.
And you're running out of fluid.
Is this more action than even Spider-Man can handle?
I love it. You're running out of fluid. It's funny because the commercial is not a visual representation of what's happening in the game. It's Green Goblin taunting Spider-Man while he's playing the game, standing over him.
With the Atari stick in his hand.
Yeah, it's great.
And
one of the things, just real quick, about the first game that I really like, and I think this is generally true of the games I played. I went through this list and played 10 minutes of all of these Spider-Man games.
That's about all you need to do for a lot of them.
That a lot of them, since this was Atari, it was kind of before it just slap a platformer on it. So a lot of them actually you do Spider-Man stuff.
Yeah.
Like this game is really interesting in that, they could have made it like a maze chase where the Green Goblin chases you or something like that. But
I think this design makes sense for the time because it's, 1 year after Donkey Kong? So lots of people were like, oh, we got to do the Donkey Kong thing. So you're ascending. But they said, oh, let's make Donkey Kong, but, with Spider-Man mechanics. So I think it's a pretty admirable job of sort of reinterpreting the franchise according to sort of what was a hot trend at the moment.
I see a drawing from Donkey Kong.
Also in 82, it must be post-Pitfall, right? So
Pitfall was 82.
Okay. So. Well, I wondered if the swing mechanic was taken, inspired by Pitfall in any way, too.
I want to say Pitfall was like April 82. Mm. I could be wrong.
And also I found Marvel was one of the first American publishers to make a video game magazine. They did the magazine Blip.
That's right.
And you can find
the rhymes with Thwip.
Well, you can find the second issue of Blip magazine on archive.org. And it's the entire first issue, which is just a full-on ad for Atari's 2600 Spider-Man, and it's Stan Lee is playing the game with a guy in the Spider-Man suit, a guy in a Goblin suit, and a bunch of 1982 children.
Is this like a comic or is it like a photo spread?
It's a photo spread, and then afterwards is a comic drawn by John Romita Sr. So
he was the Spider-Man comic artist at the time, wasn't he?
No, so he was the guy who picked up right after Ditko in the 60s.
Right, that's right. Yeah.
By 82, he had ascended to a major Marvel guy, so him drawing in his kind of a big deal, but it is your classic silly promotional comic book thing of Green Goblin, who was dead at the time in the comics. He says, Spider-Man has his own video game. I'll stop that. And he's going to attack the big premiere of the video game.
But he's in the video game.
How do Hostess fruit pies factor into this?
They're just off screen. They should have been catering the event.
I'm sure there was a coupon for one of those in every box, Atari 2600 box.
Well, and Spider-Man even says, like, I'm giving all of my proceeds to charity, and obviously Green Goblin as a villain wouldn't be paid for this game.
I want to point out how you're talking. In every Spider-Man thing, he talks like this for the longest time.
Yes.
I'm a superhero, even though I'm 16 or 18 possibly.
I think Spider-Man never has that deep a voice, though, except in that advertisement you just played.
Ooh, there'll be a clip later that's going to prove you wrong, Jeremy.
I just think of the classic Simpsons joke where the Malibu Stacy is talking. Oh, and I was like, my Spidey sense is tingling.
Yeah. Anybody call for a web-slinger? Yeah, I think it wasn't until the Maguire years or maybe a little before that, like in the cartoons, that Spider-Man would talk as a fun young guy who is not your dad.
I think until 1990, everyone just started smoking at age 12. So by the time you were in high school, you did sound
like
this.
That's true. I remember smoking when I was at least 8.
Smoking in the boys' room. Anything else going on with this game? I mean, I feel like they're getting off to a good start. It's like a lot of Atari 2600 games do not age well and are hard to play these days because they're so primitive. This one I feel like has a reliable enough concept that I feel like it is fun to play for like 20 minutes. Mm. I don't know if you guys agree with me or not.
Yeah, it's good. It's just it's hard to go back that far like
it really
something
is.
That simple. But they did the best they could with the tools they had and compared to like they also didn't overstep their bounds. Like the Superman game we talked about, they wanted to include – well, Superman has to repair a bridge, but he also has to save Lois Lane, but he also has to transform from Clark Kent, and them trying to do
and
all that stuff.
Everything is made of three boxes.
Spider-Man knew to keep it simple and just like he swings upward. That's what he's got to do. That's it.
The Superman game reminds me a lot of E.T. in that respect where it's just like there's too many things going on and nothing looks like what it's supposed to
right,
look like.
Not enough technology to support it.
Yeah, so it's like this box is the police station and this box is jail. Okay, so
keep it Spidey stupid.
We're going to move on to Quest Probe Spider-Man, and I want to say this is 1984 for the Commodore 64 and ZX Spectrum. I want to say that whenever I do – and Henry did all the work on this, by the way. But whenever I do a series retrospective for Retronauts, podcast retrospective for Retronauts, it always involves at least two computer games I've never heard of and that are terrible. And I'm also doing a Doom episode in this weekend recording session, and a lot of my research in Doom speaks to this. The guys who made Doom were like Nintendo addicts, were arcade addicts, and they were like, computer action games suck. We want to make computer action games like they are in Nintendo.
Quest Probe wasn't an action game, though, was it?
No. We're going to see a few action games, though, but just we're getting – this is a text adventure, right, with some graphics.
I'm actually surprised you haven't heard of Quest Probe.
I haven't. No, actually, I know nothing about text adventures, so I'm in trouble soon.
I mean, yeah, these were early PC adventure games from Scott Adams, who – not that one – not the Dilbert guy.
Poor original Scott Adams has to have a little asterisk by his name now.
But I guess he was kind of a superstar of early PC development, wasn't
actually,
he?
Actually, when Dilbert first started, it was Scott Adams, the cartoonist, was like, no, not that one. So the shoe's on the other
this
foot.
This is an unjust world.
Yeah, it really is, yeah.
So it was a big deal that he was going to start making Marvel games. He was going to do the Quest Probe series of Marvel was going to be 12 long. And first he did one for the Hulk and then the Human Torch, and then Spider-Man came next. And I get what it was for its time, but I just can't, like I mentally can't go back to it. It really is like you are in first-person view of Spider-Man in a first-person exploration of like there are three doors, north, west, south. Which one do you go to? N. Okay. Behind this door is Sandman. Punch Sandman. Ooh, he dodged. You don't have the item that would make Sandman do something different here. leave. And it's just it's just all command-based.
Yeah, there were like three big adventure text adventure companies at the time. There was Infocom, there was Sierra, and there was Scott Adams, who wasn't a company, but, you know, one of the creators. I definitely feel like his games hold up the most poorly. Like, even Sierra, as unfair as they can be, there's still a lot happening in those games. Yeah.
And I think 84 was the first King's Quest. And basically, as soon as graphics started becoming a thing in adventure games, text adventure games died. Like, no one wanted to put up with them anymore. And I know there's enjoyment to be found, but once graphics entered the equation, it was over.
The interesting thing about this is it is command-based, but they're in second person. So like you see from Spider-Man's perspective, but you say
Spider-Man.
You go do this.
Yeah.
Like, or it's not you aren't Spider-Man. You're talking to Spider-Man and giving him commands.
Okay, okay.
They're like to a perspective. Like you go north. Like I want you to go north, I think is the command I saw on the long play I read.
Yeah.
And that's really kind of bonkers, right? Like you're a kid controlling a comic that you're looking at. It's like something from that fantasy at the end of Big, that game, that thing that Tom Hanks, you know, was going to make, when he didn't want to make the building Transformers.
Yeah, I thought of Big too when I was watching a long play of this and seeing people type in like punch lizard and says punch never works because obviously the game would be too simple if Spider-Man got in a room and then it's like Doc Ock's here, punch Doc Ock. You won.
Yeah.
So it can't be that simple, even though Spider-Man should just punch some of these guys or web some of them. The biggest plus I'll give it is if you tell Spider-Man to go on the ceiling, then the screen flips itself.
It's that like, is
that's
cool.
Awesome. Yeah. On the ceiling.
I think it's a genre thing. I don't think Spider-Man's well suited to an adventure genre. Like he's not collecting items and solving puzzles. You know, he's punching guys and he's kind of pushing past his limits.
I see Batman as more of a text adventure guy, what were the other heroes he used? Human Torch and Hulk? What is the Hulk text adventure?
Hulk is the craziest one. Yeah. I should have watched that because that one seems the nuttiest thing.
Just have two verbs, get angry and punch.
Hulk has to rub the rubber chicken next to the pole.
Oh, yeah, smash.
And an X-Men one would have come after this, but the company went bankrupt and there weren't more Quest Pro 1s after Spidey. It has villains like Doc Ock, Electro, Lizard, Sandman. And then the goofball Ringmaster is in there, which if you don't know Ringmaster, he is literally a Ringmaster with a giant top hat with a swirling hypno coin in the center of it that he tricks people into doing his thing, bidding for him. And it's also just a silent game. I couldn't get over how quiet it was watching it. It's just – I guess people in 84 accepted like music in a game.
You're supposed to put on your Spider-Man rock opera record.
It's really hard for me to think of a text adventure that does have music. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, for that was pretty standard for the genre. But it makes – since this does have so many visuals to it because it's – you know, it's closer to something like It's like a parser-driven, like Seventh Guest, Uninvited,
right.
MacVenture kind of thing, where you do have the image and those things that are on screen you have to interact with. So it's some kind of a hybrid, and that's what makes the lack of music stand out so much, I think.
Yeah, looking at these games and going back to them, even like the original MacVenture games you mentioned, Gary, I find just playing a game in complete stark silence is eerie. Just like something feels wrong, which is why I like playing the NES ports. You get the nice moody music of the Deja Vus, the Uninviteds, et cetera.
It's a music good enough to make up for a lack of mouse.
Yes.
On an adventure game,
so. Using a control pad. So our next game is Spider-Man and Captain America in Doctor Doom's Revenge, 1989. DOS, Amiga, C64, and your ZX Spectrums.
Yeah, it's on paper, it sounds like a perfect team-up game. Like if I saw that title as a kid, I get Captain America and Spider-Man in one game and they fight Doctor Doom together. But it really isn't that. It is a Spider-Man game and a Captain America game kind of pasted together. And it's a very, very simple platform – well, not even platform, just action game, like side-scrolling action game.
I was surprised by how tiny everything is, how tiny all the superheroes are. But this really reminds me of PC action games of this era. It is a screen-by-screen game and every screen has its own name. Like this one is called Anchors Away. This one's called Raise the Ladder.
So Jet Set Willy.
Yes, exactly. Wait, did a British person design this?
No, this was by Paragon Software.
Oh, right.
As I put it, a very lucky Pennsylvania-based PC developer that got the license not just for Spider-Man but for X-Men and Punisher. They got to make all games for that on the PC, like or DOS back then.
Yeah, I mean you say very lucky, but at the time I don't think – Marvel comics or comics in general had that much cachet. I feel like they really exploded in the pop culture consciousness a couple of years later, you know, with like the X-Men reboot and the death and rebirth of Superman. And
late 80s, early 90s probably.
Yeah, that's when this was. I mean, this is 89, so it's pretty close to that. I think you're right, but we're on the cusp of a huge deal.
It's nascent.
I think Marvel and Marvel always kind of undervalued all their licenses, and just they probably saw video games as like, man, that made us some money. Like, it's who cares? Like, this person came to us.
You have to keep in mind the most popular Marvel comics of the 80s were G.I. Joe, The Nam, and Punisher, and then Wolverine. Like X-Men, Spider-Man, they were there, but they'd kind of become this like baked into pop culture consciousness thing. They were, I think, much more viable outside of the comics properties than they were as comic books.
Yeah, they were used to being a cartoon at that time. As Bob said, it's just super simple. Like, the first challenge you have is Captain America versus Robot, and it takes forever. It's like punch, steps.
God,
step,
I hate
step.
That robot.
And I also have to
get his comeuppance.
I have to apologize in that the game with tiny sprites and individually named screens is actually a later game made by Paragon. That is going to be the problem on this episode, keeping all of these games straight, because they all are kind of the same game outside of the text adventure
Spider-Man
one.
Is the one you want to – Spider-Man the title.
He's the guy in the red suit. The game with the guy in the red suit, that's the one we're talking about.
In this one, they fight a lot of goofballs. You're going to hear a lot of repetitive names that appear in all these Spider-Man games. Not this one, because it's a lot of Cap enemies like Batroc the Leaper, Gray Gargoyle, and Boomerang, but also Oddball, Rhino, and then a guy they just made up called Rattan, who's just the guy who like tries to
He's Cap made out of like dried wicker.
and also what I was shocked by looking at it, the Amiga version of it, so they tell the story kind of with comic panels, which was at least a little inventive, that they just kind of flash between comic panels.
There was that Batman that did that before
That's true. So they just ripped that off.
Is that the isometric Batman or the
– No, the second one.
Okay.
The one by Ocean that was following the ZX Spectrum one.
Okay.
But also Paragon straight up redrew Todd McFarlane art. They're like, oh, that's a cool pose, and they redrew it. As I would find out researching a game like – 2 years after this one, they were told by Marvel, like, you can't just redraw a panel. Like, the artist, you're stealing from the artist, and they're not – you can't do that.
It was a much simpler time.
Also funny in the game, it ends with Cap gets to fight Dr. Doom. Spider-Man doesn't even meet Dr. Doom. Spider-Man instead beats up the Hulk when it's actually just a robot by Mysterio. So you don't even really fight the Hulk.
It seems like Dr. Doom's revenge was snubbing Spider-Man.
Yeah.
You're not invited.
We'll get him back.
He'll make Doom pay another day. And then they get, again, redrawing stuff. When they finish the game, it's the only time Spider-Man and Captain America are even together. And then they are congratulated by George H.W. Bush. He's like, good job, guys.
Let's go out for some burgers. that was a different game.
Mysterio is such a gift to these games. These games feature Mysterio because people who are making the games just thought you could do anything. he's a special effects artist. But he can make convincing Hulk illusions. He can make everything. He shows up as an antagonist really frequently.
Yeah, he works for pretty much any – you can just say we want Spider-Man to fight a dinosaur. Technically, that's not really his thing. Mysterio made a dinosaur.
Mysterio did that.
Yeah. He made mummies. He made all that stuff as would be the thing in the next – also on this game of Mark E. Saramé, a co-founder of Take-Two, worked on this game.
Interesting.
So, worth noting.
So our next game is, I feel like, the most playable game in a modern context. It's The Amazing Spider-Man 1 for Game Boy, developed by Rare.
Mm-hmm. Hold on right there, Bob.
What did I do?
Put 30 seconds on the clock.
The most playable game in the modern context.
So far. So far. What are you saying?
Boy.
Please explain. What is your what's your beef, Jeremy?
We're talking about the LJN game for Game Boy?
Yes.
Yeah.
Jeremy has grabbed Bob's lapels for people at home, so you guys know.
I can't breathe.
And he's right up in his face.
I suffered through this game for Game Boy Works. And
okay, well.
I did not have a good time.
That's
in
the
fact,
thing.
I would say it was the worst game that I had played to that point. And I was like 60 games deep.
Jeremy, it's a sliding scale. Maybe the Atari 2600 one is better, but compared to the things that came before it, this is actually like a bit more playable.
Bob, can you play this the musical sting for Retronauts Face-Off?
We need one of those.
I think
I'll just use the Crossfire theme song.
Sleeves, get ready
crossfire.
For some fisticuffs.
I would say there's a couple Genesis Spider-Man games I'd play before Amazing for Game Boy, definitely. But I think I also have a more positive feeling on this than because Amazing Spider-Man 2 and 3 are much worse.
Yes, that's my point. Like, I mean, there will be better games after this, but this is like some kind of subcompetent work, I think.
Yeah, I mean, this was Rare just cashing a paycheck. They did not put their hearts into this game. Rare could make some great games, and this is not one of them.
This is one of probably 80 games they made in 1990.
Right. Well, yeah, so LJN got the Spider-Man license, and they'd have it for about 5 years, and this was their first one.
LJN was the worst company and got the best licenses.
I know.
Terrible. Yeah.
Well, they spent big to get the license, and then were like, throw it to some jerk.
All right,
off.
Well, we spent all of our money, so who can develop this for $10.
Well, also, like, they couldn't even afford Rare by 92 when they'd make the next Amazing. Like, they'd have to go with a much worse company. But yeah,
that was post-Battletoads Rare. Everyone wanted a piece of them then.
And yeah, this game is a super straightforward beat-em-up. It is walk to the right and punch dudes until you get to the end of the stage, and then there's a boss there. And I do like David Wise's music for it. I think
The music's good.
Yeah. And also, as a Spider-Man fan, I like that it kind of had the first ever use of his spider sense in a practical way of the stages of climb up the building and, oh my spider sense going off. Go right. Get it out of the way of the bomb.
Yeah, that doesn't work as well as it should because your spider sense will go off, but you don't really know, like, which direction do I go to dodge. So half the time you'll, like, dodge to the right and you'll move right into the path of something else that's falling into
somebody
you.
Opening a window. And also Spider-Man eats hamburgers for strength in this.
And sometimes he finds them just sitting on top of a subway car.
That makes
the rats
seem like,
haven't found it yet. I'll have it.
That makes it seem like a Japanese developer made this game. Just the hamburgers are power-ups, but I know it's Rare.
Spider-Man and hamburgers. He's not even like famous as a guy who eats hamburgers. That's
spider hamburgers.
Oh my god.
He's eating his skin.
That's disgusting.
I think the Spider-Man sprite looks okay for what their tech was, I'll say. But every villain looks like dog crap. Like,
I can't believe there's so many villains in this game. That's a little too ambitious for just this kind
look
of
like
product.
Dog crap, so
they really look bad. You get Mysterio, Hobgoblin, Scorpion, Rhino, Doc Ock, and then finally Venom. And as would happen in half of the Spider-Man games, Mary Jane is kidnapped and Spider-Man must save her. And the game starts with Mysterio just saying, like, hey, we kidnapped Mary Jane because I know you're Peter Parker. Oh, really? Well, tell me where she is. And they never really deal with the fact, like, wait, you figured out Spider-Man's secret identity.
That's more important
matter.
Than stealing his girlfriend.
That's like the kernel of the comics the ultimate conflict.
It should be a very important moment when all his biggest villains find out his secret identity.
You know what, Harry? Yeah, I'm just remembering this, too, because it opens that cutscene where he answers the phone as Spider-Man.
Hello, Spider-Man.
Yeah, Spider-Man here.
Not Peter Parker.
Big-ass mobile phone, too. Yeah. It's like a sat-track phone or whatever it's called.
It is actually – I've turned around on this game. I didn't like it before, but now that I'm thinking about that cutscene where Spider-Man taking it out in his apartment.
Uniform. I remember the one for Scorpion in the talking cutscene. He looks so bad. Like his tail's basically a hot dog behind him. And then I never beat the game as a kid because it was too hard for me. But when I watched the ending on a playthrough, they just completely rip off the ending of like Super Mario World or a Mario game of you beat Venom and then Mary Jane is lowered, and then she gives you a kiss, and hearts appear. It's like, the end. You saved the day.
That's kind of cute. I like that.
But they all know his secret identity. Like, it's over.
So Bits Laboratory did the two sequels to this game. And I could talk about what they've done since then. Some of them are –
Bits was like a Sega developer in the 8-bit era.
I'm seeing almost all Nintendo here. And a lot of these are ports. Like, they did the port for Robin Hood, Prince of Thieves. I like that NES game. I never played the Game Boy port. But they also did utter trash, like every version of the Last Action Hero game. They did a lot of R-type ports. Like, they're all over the map here, but none of these things are really that good.
Yeah, and the Terminator, some of the Terminator 2 games, Bits really specialized in licensed stuff. And the Amazing Spider-Man 2 kind of wishes it was Metroid-esque, but it is sort of like giant stages until you find the keys and then you can beat up Mysterio.
And Bits also did the Mary Shelley's Frankenstein games, the Sega CD one. Who is the lead actor in that game? Is it De Niro or something?
It was De Niro or Branagh. Well, De Niro was the monster in Frankenstein with Kenneth Branagh, but I forget. I did not play the Sega CD.
Whoever the
De Niro was the monster? I need to go watch this movie.
I believe he does like full frontal in the movie too.
Whoever the lead is,
I changed my mind.
You play as a digitized version of the lead in the Sega CD version of that game, and it's so bizarre.
and then Amazing Spider-Man 3 actually retells somewhat accurately the 1992 comic book storyline Invasion of the Spider Slayers, which was perfect to do a video game about because it is a guy, Alistair Smythe, who makes robots to kill Spider-Man, makes a bunch of robots and Spider-Man destroys a bunch of robots. That's perfect video game story.
They're pretty much Mausers from like Ninja Turtles.
Yeah, totally.
And I think that's what they're based on. Vice versa.
Yeah. And then he ends the game beating up the guy in his robot wheelchair just as he does in the comic book too. It's very strange. That's one where they just animated the cover art. And also at the same time in 1990, Spider-Man makes a cameo in Punisher, the Ultimate Payback video game, which, like, and when I say cameo, I mean in every ad for the Punisher game, Spider-Man was swinging in the background like, Spider-Man's in this game too, kids. You buy this, you get Spider-Man. And he appears in one stage.
The second and third Game Boy games are so horrible in your hands.
Oh, yeah.
It amazes me how – because I'm not a real big fan of the first one, but it's amazing how much worse they can get.
Yes.
It feels like you just get to the floor and then get out a shovel like progressively every single time.
Yeah. I mean, the thing that Rare shat out is still like a breath of fresh air compared to what Bits Laboratory did on their own.
They just feel bad. And I think the second and third one both do B jumps, A shoots, which I know that's a cliche to complain about that, but like it feels bad.
It was the established –
It's not a cliche. It's right. It's spiritually correct.
Yes.
You're in within your rights.
Yeah, it's like publishing a book. It's like, I'm going to make the words go the other direction for fun. It's like, no, there's an established grammar of this. You have to follow it.
Yeah. Also, Amazing Spider-Man 2, its box art has like Carnage on the cover, which is a total lie to you. Like, yes, Carnage is in the game, but this is not a Carnage game. Like, he's not the main villain.
We'll come later.
And Carnage is
– he is the son of Venom who's even cooler and eviler. We'll get to him.
Cool. I really want to know more about Carnage.
I mean, Venom eventually went to San Francisco and helped homeless people, whereas Carnage was just pure evil.
I want to see Venom like working at a soup kitchen in his costume, just like ladling things out.
Pretty much. Yeah, that was like a whole Larry Hama run.
Take all you want, but eat all you take. I killed Jeremy. Let's move on to the next game. I think we're ready to move on to the next game.
Oh yeah.
And that is another game called The Amazing Spider-Man. And this is the game I was talking about, 1990. It is the game. It's a screen-by-screen game. Every screen has a name. And it is very much of this period of computer development. Henry, let's talk about this game.
Yeah, I mean, it was Amiga, DOS, C64, and Atari ST. And guess what? Mary Jane's kidnapped again.
Did you know the song Last Dance with Mary Jane by Tom Petty and the Heartbreakers was actually a discard? Like the theme to a discarded Spider-Man game.
No. Everyone thought it was about pop, but really, it was called Spider-Man.
It was actually a Spider-Man game. Sega CD.
But it's just Mysterio, like in that. But that's how they get away with Spider-Man going to a bunch of different places because they're just different traps set up by Mysterio, and it's just a long screen by screen thing where you go to a different stage and then you find the key there, and then you walk all the way back and find a new key, and it's just you do web swing in it. I'll give you that, and it's better web swinging than in previous games, but
yeah.
You fight robots, zombies, mummies, lizards, and it's just it, It's fine.
What I felt was funny and also disgusting is that there's like a strip going down the right side of the screen, and that is your health bar, just an image of Spider-Man. Mm-hmm. And as you get hurt, more and more of Spider-Man's costume is torn away to reveal a skeleton underneath.
It's a Parasite Eve game.
So my headcanon is Spider-Man is a skeleton in a costume, and that makes him better to me.
There was something kind of like that in a Batman game. Like, yeah, those really like super gruesome character display status screens. Mm-hmm. I don't know who thought that was a good
Bart's
idea.
Bart's Nightmare has one too, and Virtual Bart. So like Bart gets progressively sicker until he turns to a skeleton.
Yeah. I mean, that's kind of like Doom Guy stuff as well. But I didn't know that because I watched a perfect playthrough where the guy never really took any damage. So I didn't – but that is – I feel like even 5 years later, Marvel would have said, you can't show Spider-Man's skeleton. Like, this is too gruesome for kids.
I want a Doom mod where you have sick Bart in the display heads up.
Oh, you can totally do that.
I'm sure.
Rip and tear, man.
Yeah. I'm sure there's been like five Doom mods that do that at least in the past year maybe.
I actually looked up some Simpsons WADs for that episode, but then none of them had that.
We'll get to that soon, guys.
Let's get
Don't
to the community. To the internet.
And also this was Paragon again. It was their last Spider-Man game. I think probably they kind of just shoved it out after LJN got the license for it instead. And when you free Mary Jane, it's also another super abrupt ending of like, you freed her, the end. Boop. Just done. Like in one version, I think on the Amiga, you at least get a Spider-Man hugging Mary Jane scene as your payoff for going through. I can't imagine. It looks so complicated of just like where you have to find crap. That without a FAQ, I don't know how you do it.
It's such a hard game to finish, and that's your reward, hugging Mary Jane. It just burns me up. The Mephisto took that away from me.
That is important. I think that's why Mary Jane constantly gets kidnapped in these things, because this was married Spider-Man years. All these games came out while Spider-Man was a married man to Mary Jane. And so you can't make it without her. Like in other Spider-Man games they make later, they could pretend, he's just not dating anybody right now. Spider-Man's single. But when
swinging
the fact
bachelor.
Is he's swinging bachelor.
I can't believe they never took the opportunity to have a Spider-Man-themed casino game where when you win – Mary Jane says, face it, Tiger, you just hit the jackpot.
Oh, yeah.
They should have.
That right there is better material for a video game than most of what we've seen.
Man, I feel like there's probably a pinball game that does that. Pinball games are always way too horny, I feel.
I did play a Spider-Man slot machine, but it was based on the movies, the Tobey Maguire films. Mm. But the seat shook a ton. That was its big draw.
Was there anything based on like the dancing part in 3?
No, they only licensed the first movie. Who would spend the extra to license Spider-Man 3?
Why doesn't Spider-Man dance anymore?
So before our break, let's move on to probably the most popular game to date. This game, I had no idea it was so huge at the time. It passed me by completely. It's just called Spider-Man. It is the Genesis Master System and Game Gear game. The Genesis one was 1990. Other ports came later. Henry, tell us about this game. I had no idea it was like Sega, like it was one of their huge early games for the Genesis.
It was a big ass deal for Sega. So this is explained pretty well in the console in most books about Sega, but Console Wars especially talks about how Sega of America before Sonic was in a bad place where they were handed Altered Beast, but nobody gave a crap about Altered Beast in America. So until Sonic existed, they needed to find somebody to sell their system, so they just spent the money on big names that were for outside of games. They got Mickey Mouse, they got Michael Jackson, Tommy Lasorda.
The Slim Fast guy. And kids love him.
And Spider-Man was part of that too, and it was a big get for them. It was the second American-developed game Sega had ever paid for, like that they'd – a second American-developed thing they'd ever made within Sega. And the game – also Spider-Man illegally appeared in Revenge of Shinobi a year
ago. Right. I was just about to say like – this the fact that Sega got this license kind of amazes me because I know they were in hot water over the Shinobi thing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Was it Spider-Man, Batman, and Godzilla?
Godzilla.
In Revenge of Shinobi, they all appear. You fight Spider-Man and Batman back-to-back, but it's actually like a demon that transforms into both of them.
It's Mysterio.
It kind of sucks for this developer because the bootleg Spider-Man that was in Revenge of Shinobi looks way better than the Spider-Man in the Spider-Man game.
The Genesis Spider-Man looks good.
It's okay.
Like
it's okay. But I like
Shinobi's
the arcade one.
Taller.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, it's just kind of bigger and a little bit more detail.
Like lanky.
Well, so then in 1990, though, when they re-released Shinobi and they're forced to take out Batman and Godzilla, they officially licensed Spider-Man, and Spider-Man is still in it. His when they would re-release Revenge of Shinobi later,
you're
they
right.
had to turn him into a pink dude.
Yeah,
he still
looks,
played.
He's like pink Spider-Man.
Yeah, he's a pink Spider-Man. But
that's
I guess
Peter Porker, the Amazing Spider-Man.
So yeah, they go to Technopop, and Randall Reese was kind of a source on a bit of this. He was one of the main developers, and he was apparently a driving force on making this a good Spider-Man game. He was a big-time Spider-Man fan who wanted to make this the best Spider-Man game ever that would be true to the character. And like, he owns Amazing Fantasy 15, the first appearance of Spider-Man. So he's a real fan, that guy. And at first they went with a company called Enterprise, but Marvel really disliked what they were first seeing. And so then they gave it to Technopop, and they had under a year to finish it based on like the design documents, but none of the art or assets made by Enterprise. They just had to start over.
Yeah, the only other game I could find that Technopop worked on was Tasmania for the Genesis, mm-hmm. which was a another platformer.
Yeah, I could see why Sega would go to them again for Spider-Man, but it was Marvel also clearly was getting a lot more involved at the time. And though by the time the development on the Genesis version ended, Technopop was kind of falling apart too. So they then handed it to Recreational Brainware as they wrapped it up. But it's mainly Technopop, and they also credited it was very successful. According to Randall Reese, it had sold to 2/3 of Genesis owners in 1990.
I found that amazing, and I totally believe that, but I didn't have a Genesis. All my friends did, but I never saw this game in any of their houses. I never saw
left.
It being played.
Yeah. Look to your right. Somebody will have the Genesis.
Yes.
I mean, I had it, and I had it on Game Gear. But yeah, this was people who owned it before Sonic. Like
right,
once,
okay, yeah.
Once Sonic was out, nobody was – well, there were still people like buying Spider-Man, but they were going to buy Sonic.
I think all my friends were post-Sonic Genesis fans, mm-hmm. not true gamers, of course.
Yes, and yeah, that they credited as saving the Marvel license with Sega, because Marvel was – they were so disappointed with how Spider-Man was going that had it not sold that well, Sega would have just been like, we're done with you. Marvel would have just been done with Sega. But they weren't, and that's why there were X-Men games and future Spider-Man games with Sega because of this game's success on the Genesis.
Hmm. It's kind of a good run too.
Oh, yeah.
Like, I have
yeah.
some affection for both those X-Men games, and mm-hmm. this game is actually pretty good.
Yeah.
I played this when I was younger, and like, they do as good a job as we've seen so far, and possibly better, of emulating the character. Mm-hmm. Specifically, the photography thing, which kind of blows my mind in retrospect.
Yeah.
Like, that's so cool.
That is really interesting.
Spider-Man does all the things that you would know him for if you read the comics, or even if you didn't. Like, he obvious things like strength, speed, agility, web swinging, wall crawling, spider sense. But also, it incorporates his life as Peter Parker. You can go back to your apartment to recharge webbing or to get life energy back. Mary Jane and her acting on the soap opera Secret Hospital, which was just a point in the comics at that time. That's part of it.
Secret Hospital? That's great.
Yes, yeah. And that Spider-Man has tons of comedic inner monologues, like he's talking himself and saying funny shit. And you have to buy web fluid. It's not just the web fluid is limited and you can use it to make like a shield to take damage or to shoot different levels of it. It runs out and you can find more of it in levels, but also you take photographs, you earn money. That money is then directly translated to increasing your web fluid amount at the end of a stage.
Who do you buy web fluid from? Is it just a computer or something?
No. Well, in the mythology, that Spider-Man makes it himself, and so he's spending that money on the assets for it.
Right.
But it really just works at you're at the end stage, you're at the end level screen. It says you took pictures of these people, you earned $200. That $200 it translates to this much web
several
fluid.
Dollars.
Okay, got it.
Yeah. So that's how it worked. But yeah, it was if you see Doc Ock, you don't just want to punch him, you want to turn off. Switch over to your camera and photograph him to get the money for it.
And that would be huge in kind of later games. I didn't realize how early this showed up, but that's like the same thing you do in like BioShock when you have to research enemies, mm-hmm. or Dark Cloud 2 when you have to research enemies, and it's that risk reward of like, you know, I'm putting myself in danger in order to get this advantage later by not fighting right away.
Dead Rising also,
yeah.
It was way ahead of the time there. Yeah. It was scanning stuff before many games were doing it, and it was just a natural extension of doing Spider-Man the right way. And they also wanted his sprite to be cool and get in cool poses. When he climbs up walls, it has to look all spidery. It's something that drives me crazy looking at the other games that came out of this time, that Spider-Man is just like stood up straight and running in place.
Just like strutting down the street.
That Spider-Man.
Good posture, Spider-Man.
Yeah. You don't get that until you see Spider-Man not posed in weird ways. Like Spider-Man is a weirdo who like crouches and takes odd positions. That's what he is.
I think you're thinking of Spider-Man and his amazing posture pals.
Yeah. Spider-Man is amazing back brace.
An educational comic.
And so they took real pride in making Spider-Man look cool. And I believe it was – let me look at the name. Yeah, it was Scott Halley. It was the person they credited as the artist really instrumental in getting the design of Spider-Man correct or as cool as possible. And the other plot of it is – so the plot of it is that Spider-Man is framed for planting a bunch of bombs in New York that are going to explode in 24 hours. So you have a ticking clock in the game that's constantly at the bottom of the screen, which doesn't really run in real time. But also, every time you die, the clock goes down, too. And
so kind of Prince of Persia-ish.
Yeah. Hmm. I never thought of it like that. Yeah. And that the villain is Kingpin, but also in it are Doc Ock, Electro, Lizard, Hobgoblin, and Venom. And Venom actually kind of appears in fun ways. Like one time you beat Hobgoblin, you think you're done, and then Venom pops out and you have to fight Venom. And this was when Venom was super cool, not a villain, like not an anti-hero, but a straight up bad guy.
Not a soup kitchen worker yet.
Yeah. And that he's like – he kidnaps Mary Jane again. And so at the end of the game, you have to beat up Kingpin and save Mary Jane from being dumped in a vat of acid. And it's pretty nutty to look at, actually. But
it's grisly.
Isn't it the one where Kingpin will put both Spider-Man and Mary Jane in a vat of acid if you lose?
I just saw a GIF
of this online.
Ooh.
Yes, but they actually –
it's really horrible.
It is pretty horrifying. But that's in the Sega CD remake of this game. But they would make it more grisly. You can fail and she'll fall in and it'll be like – game over. Mary Jane's is a pile of like corroded
bones and matter.
Closed casket.
It explains the Marvel comic What If Mary Jane and Spider-Man Were Dissolved in Acid that I read.
Not a great seller.
It's a dark comic.
It's super duper grisly. And also that the game, the Master System Game Gear versions were just less cool versions of this that had the same stages and most of the same abilities. Like you could still take the photographs in it too. But it was just super duper simple comparatively, especially like the sprite just didn't look as cool either. And the music's pretty nice in it. I actually want to throw people in general to my old buddies, Brett Elston, who's I think been on the show before.
Quite a few times.
He does the video game music podcast, VG Empire, and he did one called Spectacular Spider Sounds, all about the Spider-Man game soundtracks. So and there's a lot of focus on the Genesis ones. Mm-hmm. But it's pretty much it. It made Spider-Man was – this Spider-Man game for Sega was central in like so many of their ads. I remember in those 1992 Spider-Man comics that turned me into a forever Spider-Man fan, I see it so clearly. An Amazing Spider-Man 364, there's a page of like get all your favorite heroes in one system on the Game Gear. Spider-Man, Bart. And George Foreman all together.
And Buster Douglas.
I remember their team up, Secret Wars 3.
Sonic and Knuckles and Lasorda.
Yeah.
Again, this is like Sonic hadn't completely replaced every other character as the only Sega character that mattered, you know? And so they were still advertising the crap out of and that did kind of sell me on a Game Gear of, oh, yeah, I can get Spider-Man, Bart Simpson.
And Flicky?
On the same machine.
Awesome. We've got so many more games to cover. We'll be back right after our break.
it's Rob Riggle.
And Sarah Tiana.
And you are listening to Riggle's Pick.
Yeah, and a ham horn, and we have a new podcast. You can find our show exclusively on the Podcast One app on PodcastOneSports.com. And don't forget to rate, review, and subscribe on Apple Podcasts.
Every Thursday, we're going to sit around and we're going to talk about the things that really excite us, like life, comedy, sports, a lot of sports.
Ourselves.
A lot of Sarah.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Kim Jong-un.
Yeah.
Whatever. It's going to be a lot of fun. I hope you join us.
If you're looking to buy a car, you're probably familiar with terms like MSRP. You might even know what it stands for, but what does it actually mean? The same goes for invoice, list price, and dealer price. It's enough to confuse anybody. All you're really looking for is a price that actually means something. Introducing True Price from TrueCar. Now you can know exactly what you'll pay for the car you want, including fees and accessories, before you even get to the dealership. TrueCar dealers will show you the true price on cars like the one you want, all from the comfort of home. And how do you know if your true price is a great price? Because TrueCar shows you what other people paid for that same car you want. And your certified dealers know this, so they set their true price competitively so they can win your business. So when you're ready to buy a new or used car, visit TrueCar to enjoy a more confident car buying experience. Some features not available in all states.
It's Marvel Comics' Amazing Spider-Man like you've never seen him before in four action-packed video games. Spider-Man comes to the NES in Revenge of the Sinister Six. Dr. Octopus has assembled Electro, Mysterio, Hobgoblin, and more. Only you can disarm his evil plan to rule the world. For portable web-swinging action, it's Spider-Man 2 for Game Boy and Spider-Man for Game Gear. You'll need your spider sense when you take on supervillains Venom and Carnage. Get ready as Marvel Comics Dream Team bursts onto Super Nintendo in Spider-Man and the X-Men in Arcade's Revenge. It'll take all your mutant powers, Spidey's webs, Wolverine's adamantium claws, Cyclops' optic blasts, Storm's lightning, and Gambit's exploding cards to foil Arcade's diabolical plot. Marvel Comics Amazing Spider-Man on NES, Game Boy, Game Gear, and now Super Nintendo. If this is too much action for you, take it up with this guy.
So our next video game with the Spider-Man in it, it is Spider-Man the Video Game, aptly named. 1991 arcade. I can say I have never seen this game my life.
What?
I've been to so many arcades in 1991. It was never there. It was always Simpsons, Ninja Turtles. Never Spider-Man.
I keep traveling back in time to 1991 looking for this game, and I've never seen it.
They have it at Ground Control now. So next time you're
do.
In Portland.
Okay, cool. Yeah, I might be there soon.
I played through it. It was it's very fun. This is a good game.
Well, man, then I was a lucky boy because
hey, lucky boy.
Because they did have it at the Atlanta arcade places I was going to. It was there with X-Men and Ninja Turtles and Simpsons, but unlike those Konami games, this is by Sega's Amusement Division. While the American side was working on Genesis games, the license also gets handed to the arcade people.
I think that's why I was dissing the look of the Genesis Spider-Man, because immediately I was going in order doing this research as you were sending me your notes. I looked at this one. I was like, wow, this Spider-Man looks great.
This
it is a good-looking
gorgeous.
Game.
This is gorgeous. The art is the best part of this game. Like, Spider-Man and everybody else is so vibrant and alive. I kind of, the way everybody is their bodies are, they're like kind of extra lanky, but I like that. It's a very specific look to them. And there's sound effects everywhere. And there's also on screen, like the speech bubbles appear as well. And
I thought it was funny because a few of them are just bizarre. The punching onomatopoeia is VOK, V-O-K. I feel like they, Japan should have ran that by someone maybe. I don't know.
I think that's German for something.
Wok.
I must make my stir fry in a wok.
And this is a really weird – so it's a classic quarter muncher brawler, and that means you need four people in it. And you get Spider-Man with his best buddies – Black Cat, Hawkeye, and Namor the Submariner.
Spider-Man and his amazing friends with benefits.
Yeah. Black Cat is, like, she's at least, like, a good friend with benefits for Spidey. But, like, he has no real relationship with Hawkeye or Namor?
Namor
in comics. Yeah. Yeah.
Spider-Man has no friends.
And it's also – can we just talk for just a tiny moment about how brave it is to make it Speedo Namor?
Yeah.
There's not any of the redesigns where they gave him clothes. So like,
there's
one like Adonis walking through like – who's just,
One player really likes the Speedo Man.
Yeah, he's going crazy.
Namor classically is a guy with – he's one of Marvel's – he is Marvel's actually very first superhero. And
the first mutant.
Yeah, and also the first mutant. And he's – but he's –
also the grumpiest one.
Mm-hmm. And he's Imperious Rex is his saying. But he is not Spidey's friend in any way. It felt more like – Marvel just said, look, you can't have Avengers there in this game. You can't have X-Men there in this game.
Wasn't Hawkeye in the Avengers?
Hawkeye is in the Avengers, actually.
Like, I associate with him just with Avengers. And then Spider-Man I associate with always wanting to be an Avenger but never actually being allowed into the club.
At this time in the comics, he had become a reserve Avenger. Meanwhile, Hawkeye was leading the West Coast Avengers.
God.
But
who was in the Avengers Selective Service?
Beat us up, Bob.
You nerds.
And Namor was just he's West Coast Avengers also. And Black Cat actually had lost her powers and it was retired at the time in the comics.
So she was just a lady walking around beating dudes up.
She was dating Flash Thompson actually in a romantic subplot.
Goodness gracious.
But
was this like before or after Flash was a werewolf from the moon?
No, that was John Jameson Jr. Yeah.
Oh, that's
werewolf
right.
From the moon,
I
not
got mixed
Flash
up.
Thompson. It's easy to get it mixed up.
At some point, guys, let's just start making up stuff and see if it follows it.
I will believe anything you tell me, but let's have like a One Piece game series in here, and I will fool all of you.
Revenge.
Yes.
But for as random as the heroes were, the supervillains were like A+. They got all the best people. They got Kingpin, Venom, Doc Ock.
The best villains.
Lizard, Scorpion,
Fantastic
Sandman,
villains.
Green Goblin, Hobgoblin, and Dr. Doom, and you fight him in Latveria.
Okay, so Dr. Doom actually makes sense for Namor and like no one else.
Yeah, well, I think
Hawkeye versus Dr. Doom is just not a classic.
Avengers versus
Dr.
Doom is A-OK.
Well, but Dr. Doom would like mop the floor with all of them. But if you're working to the end of a game where you want to fight a bunch of robots in a castle, then Dr. Doom is the guy you're going
right.
to pick. He's kind of the
Marvel Comics version of Shredder.
Yeah, totally. And though at the end of the game, when you beat Dr. Doom finally, he explodes in like a bunch of robot parts.
Yeah, I was going to say, is this a Doom bot?
It is the Doom bot, I believe.
It's not Christoph.
And also his Christoph is, in case you don't know, Christoph is a like his
case.
Here we go. Adopted, here we go.
Edge case that you don't know what this is.
The adopted child he takes on to be his heir, who then is basically a child in a Dr. Doom sized robot suit.
Wow.
They went through a lot of convolutions to retcon every loss that Dr. Doom ever had because they wanted to be like, no, he's the best villain. He's never been defeated except all these other times he was defeated. But that was actually a robot or a little boy.
Yeah, John Byrne was obsessed with keeping his win-loss record as perfect.
That was actually a wizard.
It usually was a wizard unit.
It's for parody with life model decoys.
Yeah.
If the good guys get to do it, the bad guys get to as well.
And the plot, too, is that Venom is that Dr. Doom has recreated the Venom symbiote and is trying to take over the world with it, so which is an excuse for you to fight a bunch of Venom sprites at the end of the game.
And a giant Venom.
There's
a huge screen-filling Venom you fight as the small version.
And that was
so
really
cool.
That's the coolest thing about this game. It's pretty much a standard brawler, except once a stage, the camera will zoom out to be more of a traditional platformer, and you just kind of explore a big stage. You'll even fight you fight Dr. Octopus in that scale, not in the close-up scale. So they got pretty creative in that, and it also let Spider-Man actually like climb walls for a change. His powers really aren't used that well near because you have to consider, well, somebody might play this game entirely as Hawkeye, so there can't be a part where Hawkeye climbs up a wall to get somewhere.
Yeah, we're not seeing a whole lot of web play in mm-hmm. these games outside of like the first one, a bit sprinkled here and there.
That's really just between Spidey and Mary Jane.
Web play.
but yeah, the art in it is just gorgeous. I love this draw. The game over art of Spider-Man is beautiful in this game.
Because it is great.
He's all beat up and
he's being held down by
shoulders.
Z demons. There's a saw blade that comes down into his chest.
Yeah, I think I might actually have the artist for my episode covers, Nick Daniel, recreate this because it looks like a Mad Magazine cover. Mm-hmm. And I can see the text above it saying, in this issue, we slander Spider-Bland. And it's just like him shrugging in the What Me Worry pose.
Spidey beats up the usual gang of idiots.
Yeah, the lighter side of Spider-Man.
That's just great art. And if you assume Spider-Man is showing you that after you run out of quarters, he's like, hey, you ran out of quarters.
go ask your mom.
Pockets in this Spidey suit.
and the plot of this would actually be kind of redone in the 2008 Mighty Avengers comic storyline Venom Bomb, where Doctor Doom shoots a Venom Bomb at Manhattan and a bunch of symbiotes take over people's bodies. So I wonder if Brian Michael Bendis, the writer, played this game and was basing it on that or not. But just watch a playthrough of this because it is so gorgeous. The art is so gorgeous. I wish this had been released in the way Konami released all of their beat 'em ups in the last generation. But I'm guessing Sega and Marvel weren't really talking then, so it wasn't going to happen.
Or I mean, if you see it, definitely drop a quarter in it. And like even you know, if you find it, you can Google it. Like if you want to find check this out with a meme thing, like I recommend doing
it.
I think this
is
pretty fun.
Yeah, when I'm in Portland this summer, I will play this game.
Yeah, we should definitely play some because it's an extremely like I mean it is just a beat 'em up. Like all these games have a sameness to them, and what you're playing for is the flavor
and the graphics.
You know, the graphics and flavor and sound effects and music and stuff. And
I call the Speedo Man.
Yeah, that zoom in zoom out thing. Actually, I feel like it adds a lot. Like, it's a very neat mechanic.
It's really cool, yeah.
Yeah, the Ninja Turtle games were doing that.
Mm-hmm. Our next game is Spider-Man Return of the Sinister Six, 1992 for NES, Master System, and Game Gear. Mm-hmm. Henry, please, what is this game and who are the Sinister Six?
Well, so Sega was in the middle of their Spider-Man games, but LJN still had the license, so they were putting it out on the Nintendo systems mainly. And this was them recreating the Amazing Spider-Man story. From 334 to 339, the Sinister Six was a team up of all of Spider-Man's first villains, which is Dr. Octopus, Sandman, Electro, Hobgoblin. Well, Hobgoblin actually wasn't in the original lineup. Vulture, Mysterio. So they all team up to take on Spider-Man in the 90s in this big crossover event. And that translates in this game to kind of Mega Man-ish going through six different stages, each themed after one of the villains. And so you're going through the Hobgoblin stage, you fight Hobgoblin at the end. You go through the Sandman stage, you fight Sandman at the end. And it's pretty straightforward in that way. And it's another Bits Studio production barf.
I will say, despite the quality of the game itself, I love the box art. It's just Spider-Man's face and the enemies are reflected in his eyes and his mask. And I feel like the one thing LGN got right was their packaging. It managed to sucker a lot of people into buying the Friday the 13th game, into buying Back to the Future. I feel like they knew how to bait and switch people.
They knew how to trick children. Definitely.
Yes.
And they spent the big money to get Eric Larson, who was the artist of that crossover, to do the box art for it too. So if you were a kid like me who was reading those comics and then saw that cover – you didn't realize it wouldn't look anything like that. You were just like, cool, the Eric Larson's cartoons are jumping off the page at me. And there's not much more to say to it either. It's you kind of walk around a bunch of stages till you find keys and it opens up a door at the end that then you walk through Mega Man style to then have a one-room fight against the villain. And they took art from the last page of Spider-Man versus Superman comic 2, which they just like straight up stole from the late Ross Andrews and made that the win screen. It's like, you beat everybody. Here's a drawing. The end. And like, here's three credits. And they they did a little – Bits did a little better work with next year's game, which was on the Super NES and Genesis.
And that game is – is this the game you're talking
yeah.
about? Spider-Man and the X-Men in Arcade's Revenge. And that's 93 for SNES, Genesis, Game Gear, and Game Boy. I did play the SNES version of this back in the day. Mm-hmm. I don't remember what I thought of it, but I just thought it was cool that there are a bunch of different characters in it.
I also played it on a rental and thought it was very confusing.
Mm.
Oh, yeah.
The layouts are like really vague and – it's, you know, kind of exploratory but not in a Metroidvania sense. It's just like a where the hell am I going sense and why can't I get through this passage and so on and so forth.
Yeah, very confusing level layout. This is Bits Laboratory too, right?
Yep.
God,
yep.
They did so many of these games.
The level layouts vary though. So like the kind of gimmick here – so that's how the Spider-Man stage plays. That's a little bit how the Storm stage plays, the Cyclops mm-hmm. stage. But other ones, it's like the Wolverine and Gambit stage are almost like runners. Like you have yeah. something at the left that's chasing you. You have to – so they kind of vary the gameplay depending on the character, which – is kind of cool, but it's a little bit of a woof. Like,
mm-hmm. Yeah, something about the game experience I had playing this always makes me kind of muddle it in my mind with Krusty's Funhouse. I don't know why, but I think they just have that kind of similar sort of like
well, I think one
non-linear stage design
yeah.
where you're just kind of wandering around doing stuff.
It feels
a little vague.
Very European. I'm not using that yeah. in a derogatory way. I feel like European platformers I think European platformers have that kind of style. This is a Pennsylvania developed game though, but mm-hmm. I think you're thinking of Krusty's Funhouse because one of these levels is just like a toy factory or like a toy.
Yeah. Well,
place. Well, I mean, it's arcades.
Right.
Wolverine
right.
fights yeah. a lot of Jack in the Boxes.
Yeah. He was always the least interesting X-Men villain.
Mm-hmm. Well, you knew you were in for a goofy story when Arcade showed up, but you'd at least get like funny draw. I think it was he's a guy the artists love because they're like, well, I can draw anything that Arcade makes. He just makes all these. He's more like a Superman 50s style Superman villain
yeah.
who fights the X-Men.
Yeah, and it's always stuff like, oh no. Oh, Colossus is inside of a giant pinball game.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, weren't all of Superman's early enemies just like magic imps?
Magic imps or like scientists or
yeah.
a guy literally called the Trickster who was like, well, this big whoopee cushion's going to get you, Superman. And that's kind of the same way Arcade comes from. But actually, it's funny you mention Krusty's Funhouse because a person in common worked on this. Friend of Talking Simpsons, game producer Paul Provenzano. Oh,
I guess I should watch what I say.
He worked on both of those. He he would admit they weren't great games in the LGN years. But so he told us a story about going to the Marvel offices and with the editors going over like what could be the subjects for Spider-Man games for LJN. And they were suggesting bad guys to him. And then when he's going through the booklet or whatever of lists of villains, he sees like, but this guy's literally called Arcade. Like this guy is a video game villain. We got to use this guy. And so,
it's staring you right in the face.
But really, it's more Arcade in the classic boardwalk sense, yeah. not in the video game arcade sense.
A lot of small shops and boutiques.
Well, actually, he's got a bow tie, so he's kind of like a forerunner to Howard Phillips.
Oh.
Yeah, he is. He's they're wow. both of the same school of thought, the Tucker Carlson. I'm sorry to even compare anyone to Tucker Carlson.
That was really unnecessary.
But this also rips off – well, not rips off. It takes direct inspiration from Uncanny X-Men 123 through 125 – right down to the opening is Spider-Man is swinging around and then sees a dump truck kidnap the X-Men and he goes and follows it to save them from Arcade.
That's great. The X-Men were thwarted by a dump truck?
It's one of the most emasculating X moments.
Well, like a tube pops out of a fake dump truck and then sucks them up and then they
yeah,
all wake up.
They had to feed it by a vacuum, Bob.
Yeah. Wow.
And they all wake up in pinballs.
And so. the truck was lined with like anti-X-Men chemicals or something. They couldn't punch their way out of it.
This was before everyone was like hyper-powered. And
I see.
They could still be punked by pretty common things.
Yeah. And Arcade would then drop them into Murder World, which is just this amusement park of a more deadly danger room. And the trick with it is that it allowed him to make robots of guys who they wouldn't normally fight. So while they would fight Carnage, Juggernaut, Rhino, and Apocalypse, they also had very weird X-Men villains who nobody has heard of, like Selene and Nazareth. Or no, Naztirth? He was in Excalibur. I don't know the guy. Like I was not reading that.
I think Selene shows up.
Isn't that one of the like Belasco's demons from the
magic?
Magic's realm, whatever the hell that is.
Inferno.
He was an Inferno. Limbo. Yeah, he was an Inferno guy. I am not the X-Men.
I can't believe I know that.
This was made by Software Creations of Plock and Silver Surfer NES fame.
Ooh. Look forward to our
so
block
the music
episode.
Was good,
never.
Right?
Yeah, the music was all right. Yeah. And they were apparently really difficult to work with, and LGN gave them a lot of grief during development.
They're so. Like, do you know who we are? We're the Plock people. Watch yourself.
And then also in 1993, that's when the Sega CD version of Spider-Man came out, then renamed Amazing Spider-Man versus the Kingpin. And Sega thought it would – just as Spider-Man had saved the Genesis, Spider-Man was going to save the Sega CD. And so they invested heavily.
Nothing can save the Sega CD.
The Sega CD was like the dissolved Mary Jane skeleton in acid at this point.
Yeah. So – but they went all out. So the the developer they hired was Monkey Business to remake the game for Sega CD. So there were a crap load of cutscenes, full CD music, a new overworld map, a couple new levels, one where you fight – Vulture on a moving train, which like technically you look at it like, oh, they probably couldn't have done this on the Genesis. And then, the cutscene, that's where the cutscene of if you fail, you can actually have like three different endings to the game. One, you beat up Kingpin, but the timer has run out. So Mary Jane has been dissolved in acid and Spider-Man's like, you're going to pay for this, Kingpin.
And that's where Marvel's Injustice comes in.
Or you lose to the Kingpin and then he dumps you both in acid together. Man. And it's a horrifying gif.
They're all about acid in these games.
Kingpin loves acid.
Is that his thing? Like, what is Kingpin's deal? Is he
he sells drugs and pretends to be a legitimate businessman.
And was he invented in the – he feels like a very 80s villain.
No, he was a 66 creation. First appeared in Amazing Spider-Man 50, but then – in the late 70s, they realized he was a much better fit for Daredevil than Spider-Man, so he becomes a Daredevil villain.
Right.
But I think if you're licensing Spider-Man villains, he ends up in your pack, so you can do a Kingpin guy.
You got to have a way for Spider-Man to make fat jokes.
Yeah.
Over and over and over.
Well, it's also he works better as a Daredevil villain because despite the fact that Kingpin is much bigger than Spider-Man, he is still – he is a large human who is nowhere near as strong as Spider-Man. Mm. So he's not a physical threat. And – yeah, I just play one of these cutscenes. The voice work in it, I will give them credit for doing great work on the voice work then, like spending the money on it, but it sounds like crap. Now, Cam Clark is the big standout of it.
Cool. I'll play a part of one of these cutscenes here.
It's a long story, Kurt. You might say I ran into you while I was looking for something down here.
That's Spider-Man, by the way.
Yes.
Right.
I'll keep going.
A key. Could this be the key? Where did that come from?
I don't know. I never saw it before.
Here, you take it. Thanks, Kurt. This will help me clobber the Kingpin.
I'm Peter Parker. I'm such a young man.
That's right before he was going to tell kids to eat graham crackers to keep down the urges.
Yeah, it's. I couldn't find out the name of any actor from it. They weren't credited. But
it's all non-union.
Spider-Man reminds you to put saltpeter in your mashed potatoes.
But when you hear Cam Clark's voice, you're like, all right, that's Leonardo. Like, and also, though, that the music was done by Spencer Nielsen. Like, Sega made a big deal of getting this guy who had worked in real music to work on Sega CD games, and he had got the lead singer of One Hit Wonder Mr. Big to do two different songs for it, including the big hit Swing Time, which would play during boss fights.
That will be in this episode, by the way.
I should also suggest you listen to, again, VG Empire. My friend Brett did a whole interview with Spencer Nielsen about all his work on Sega CD games, including how the Mr. Big lead singer worked on the game.
So our next game is another one I played because it came in a cool red cartridge. It's Spider-Man and Venom, Maximum Carnage, 94, Genesis and SNES, and also has a green jelly soundtrack, which leads to a lot of bad guitar samples in these games.
Yeah, this was – I'd call this the peak of LJN and software creation Spider-Man work. It was still – they just made another brawler, but this was the best looking and best playing of those brawlers, though. It is balls hard. That game is so difficult. I never beat it without a game genie.
Yeah, it's an arcade-style brawler, but it's like there's no – you're given limited continues and sort of just like get good or else you'll never finish this game. I think I played like up to the third stage in this when I rented it. That's about it.
It's always a weird value proposition when like a arcade-style brawler goes directly to console.
Yeah,
so there's no – it's not like, oh, you know, I have the arcade experience with this limited resource to get me in. It's just like, oh, I'm just going to unlimited continue and make my way through this with this kind of bad mechanic.
Only later in life, like on the PlayStation and Dreamcast, I think they would actually go and add extra features to be like, we'll give you this extra mode. We know it's just an arcade game, so just here, have this too.
And the big draw as a kid for me, though, was you could play as Venom. You could never play as Venom in a game before this. So it's like this is a game – you'd have a Spider-Man stage and you'd have a Venom stage. And you kind of switch between the two. That was a big draw, not to mention that it came right as Carnage was at his hottest. It was the year before in the Spider-Man comics there was a 14-part, 3-month-long Spider-Man event called Maximum Carnage. And this is that exactly. Like they redraw panels from every issue telling every plot point in order. In the comic, Spider-Man doesn't beat up a ton of random idiots. Like he doesn't beat up 80 dudes on skateboards in the comic. But other than that,
that'd be a great comic. Just 50 pages of beating up
Spider-Man beats up skateboarders.
Spider-Man no more.
He gives up after all the skateboarders. But all the villains from the comic are there, even though the ones you wouldn't pick to be good for, like a guy called Carrion is one of the enemies who's just like a floating dude who spreads disease. Like, he's not really a good video game villain, but he was in the comics. So
the way you pronounce that made it sound a lot like Carry On an Airplane.
Yeah.
Airplane. I was like, what a villain.
You're right.
This won't fit in the suitcase dimensions.
And also, they got every superhero who was in the comic, too, as they're basically just a summon who does an attack. And that includes Captain America, Iron Fist, Firestar, and Deathlok. Wow. They all appear in it. And yeah, I loved playing it. It was the right time for it. I don't think it holds up particularly well.
It does. I want to go back to the Green Jelly thing. They did the soundtrack, and that was a heavily advertised feature. At this point in my life, I'm like, I vaguely remember them from that Three Little Pigs song, but I've never really heard anything else from them. I think they were counting on kids with poor eyesight to think it was Green Day on the box or something. Just like, it's Green something, kids. You know them.
There was kind of Green Jelly mania.
Really?
I remember that being – because that video was ubiquitous.
It was,
Were they Green Jelly at this point or Green Jello still?
I think they were Green Jelly.
They're credited as Jelly in the game. Once they signed with a record label, they were told, like, you can't be Jello anymore. You got to be Jelly.
I mean, around this time, there was also the Beavis and Butthead games, which had Gwar soundtracks, and that felt more appropriate because Beavis and Butthead liked Gwar. Gwar was more notable than Green Jelly for other reasons, but it just struck me as odd.
It's very hard to imagine Peter Parker coming home from a day of photography and then popping on his Green Jelly CD.
Time to relax.
The little pigs.
it more felt akin to Carnage's taste, because Carnage was a hard rock dude who, like, one of his first appearances, he goes to basically a Metallica concert and murders people on stage. That's what Carnage expressed. He was like, these kids today with their hard rock and roll and heavy metal, they're going to be killers. Like, that's who Cletus Cassidy was.
I see. So you mentioned the value proposition of this game. Let me skew that for you a little bit more. The Japanese version of this game is one of those a handful of American-developed games by Acclaim published in extremely small numbers in Japan that now sells for like $2,000.
Yep.
So if you want to really question the value proposition, you go track yourself down a Japanese copy of this game.
And it was only on Genesis there. And I think that's because the Super Famicom had exclusively Amazing Spider-Man Lethal Foes.
I have never heard of this game until I saw these notes of yours, Henry.
Yeah, I had actually never heard of it until this either. It was released in March 1995, only Super Famicom, Japan only. And actually, I was stunned looking at it because, like, the sprite is fantastic. They took the Mark Bagley drawing of Spider-Man and really did make the sprite as close to him as possible. It's really surprising. And it was made by Agenda for Epoch. And Epox mainly just releases a ton of Doraemon games. That's their main thing they've been doing for like 20 years.
They publish some other stuff that I've covered on Game Boy Works, like Cyrae, that weird puzzle game where like the moon comes out and breaks up the level every few seconds. Mm. It's a they were a pretty weird company, and they also had you know the pocket game computer in the early 80s. They released the first like Game Boy style handheld game system 5 years before Game Boy. So they could have been big, but they weren't.
Well, in the developer agenda, the only like non-Doraemon game I could find that we've heard of is they did the DS Clubhouse Games game, which was just like play poker with your friends on your DS.
All right. So they're still around.
Yeah, they apparently are still around. And it's a very straightforward side-scroller where Spider-Man fights Beetle, Doc Ock, Green Goblin, Venom, and then Carnage. And basically, it's kind of its own version of the Maximum Carnage storyline as well. And the only other thing I'll say awesome about it is that they paid Mark Bagley for really great original cover art. And way before the Ultimate Spider-Man video game perfectly captured Bagley's artwork, this got the closest. So it looked kind of fun. And there's apparently an English translation ROM out there. Spider-Man also like talks a lot in it in Japanese.
I played a little bit of the ROM. It feels very stiff. And Spider-Man has that weird stick back, like it's good posture Spider-Man rather than regular Spider-Man.
I think when you stop moving, though, he crouches down and like his like famous crouch.
When he walks, he walks like a fembot. Like it's very straight. It's like
he's
going to
fire out of his apex at you.
He's like a real spider. It just comes out of his thorax.
I think we're running out of time, but I want to just zip through these to get to the last one because it's a biggie. So first off, November 1995, there's the Venom Spider-Man Separation Anxiety, which is the sequel to Maximum Carnage. And it does not do very well because I think like the spell was over or just like the fad was done. People weren't as into it.
Yeah, and was this a black cartridge?
I want to
say they had a similar gimmick with this one. I'll look it up.
And in that one, you fight a bunch of Carnage ripoffs and also Carnage. So there's a plot in a Venom comic where they make five more children of Venom who look like Carnage except they're lamer. The only cool one is the Smurfette of the group, Scream. She has like killer giant 80s hair that just stabs people.
Yeah, no black heart and the cover art is bad. It's just a bunch of composited images of existing Venom types. What are they?
Those are his children.
Yeah.
You're teaming up with Venom to fight the evil symbiotes in San Francisco. And Daredevil, Hawkeye, Captain America, and Ghost Rider also appear in the game. At the same time, there was a much more kid-focused Spider-Man game in 95 for the Super NES and Genesis, Spider-Man the Animated Series, based on the then-new Spider-Man animated series Bob Hates.
Not just me.
It's really kiddie. It's really cheesy. The only thing that really connects it to the cartoon is just the designs of all the villains. Otherwise, it works just like any other Spider-Man game. They don't recreate any real storylines from the cartoon. And this would be LJN's final Spider-Man game. And And it was developed by Western Technologies, who, as far as I could tell, their most famous thing was that they made the games that were bundled with the Menacer. And so they worked on this after that.
Thank you for your service.
And yeah, you fight Doc Ock, Spider Slayers, Venom, and Scorpion all straight from the thing. And it's the box art, too. As a kid, I didn't even want to play it because I was like, this is a lame kid's game based on a cartoon. I want a game with murderers like Carnage, man.
I'll play the Spawn Brawler. Thank you very much. I feel like, so we've seen Bits Laboratory and then Software Creations are the ones who mishandled the franchise so far. Mm-hmm. And Sega and maybe the Atari people are the good guys in this to date in this chronology.
Sega's going to be a bad guy soon. But then enters Capcom with not exactly Spider-Man games, but games where Spider-Man is in them. Marvel Super Heroes comes out in 1995. After X-Men Children of the Atom begins the Marvel years with Capcom, they then make a Marvel fighting game that's all the popular Marvel characters, not just mutants. And it's sort of a retelling of the Infinity Gauntlet comics, which is now what they're doing again with Marvel versus Capcom Infinite. And Spider-Man is just one of the choosable characters in it, but it's not really – there's maybe like a Spider-Man stage in them, but he's just another member of the troop. There's also was – The Super NES didn't get a Marvel Superheroes fighting game. It got a platformer made with those sprites called War of the Gems.
You're right, yeah.
Where you could play as Spider-Man, Iron Man, Hulk, Captain America, or Wolverine and just go through the world and collect all the gems. But so technically it is a Spider-Man game if you play through it all the way of Spider-Man. But Spider-Man's been a consistent part of the Capcom world. He just got He's in Marvel vs. Capcom Infinite as well, keeping that streak going. And Venom was later added to Marvel vs. Capcom 2. And he's kind of – he was just like a burlier Spider-Man was how he played as. But I love the Spider-Man sprite in the Capcom
games. It looks really good. And I assume they probably reused it throughout the games or maybe improved
it.
Yeah,
they pretty much reused it.
I just like how lanky he is, how he kind of just likes – you know, he's very lanky. He's very well animated, very fluid. Mm-hmm. I feel like not since the arcade game did he look this good.
Yeah, and when he would do the Maximum Spider, or also I love using is just an image of him pointing at his like taunt is "Do your job." It's just a funny image of Spider-Man pointing at Chun-Li.
So you disappoint me,
Spider-Rand.
And then in 1996 we come to the end of the pixel era of Spider-Man, and it is a sad one. It was The Amazing Spider-Man Web of Fire for the 32X. And I bet that they thought just as Spider-Man helped the Genesis and, well, it didn't save the Sega CD, but I guess it was a good game on it. Maybe they thought 32X needed a Spider-Man game too. But by the time it came out, the 32X was dead. So it just took them too long to make it, and it was made in small quantities, so it is actually a very collectible game because of that.
Yeah, I think it's the most expensive 32X game, which is to say like $60 or $70.
And it was developed by Blue Sky coming off of Vector Man.
You can really tell if you take a look at it.
Yes, well, because they thought that the silicon graphics and motion-captured Spider-Man would look really awesome, but it looks so much worse than he did in the Genesis game.
Like, yeah, I mean, Vector Man was what, just a collection of balls stuck together? Yeah,
that works.
Yeah.
That works as a silicon-based
graphic. Yeah, there's an abstraction to it, but yeah, people, they just every character is Sid from Toy Story.
Yeah.
Just, no, it's so uncanny valley.
And the game is just like balls, too. Number one, he fights some of like the lamest villains he's ever fought in a game. The Eel, Dragon Man, Super Adaptoid, and Thermite.
Who the hell are they?
Well,
are they actually from the comics?
They all are from the comics, but you rarely see them because
ones who always stole the Hostess fruit pies.
Yes. Are there a guy Spider-Man beats in like the first page?
It makes sense to start introducing these weird also-rans because you don't want to literally just fight Green Goblin every single time you play a Spider-Man game, but the issue is the Rogues Gallery is not quite big enough to support that.
Yeah, I would have at least anchored it with like get Doc Ock, and then also the Eel and Dragon Man work for him. And
yes.
Meanwhile, Super Adaptoid is like he's a high-level Avengers villain, you know. But that's also because he's fighting Hydra in this game, which Spider-Man is not really known for fighting Hydra. And they put a techno bubble over Manhattan, and Spider-Man pretty much just has to run over rooftops and beat up Hydra villains, which at least like those are henchmen Spider-Man would beat up hundreds of if he was fighting them, I guess. But it's lame. And also the only other superhero in it is Daredevil, who you can kind of summon if you collect enough Daredevil logos throughout a stage. But
I remember that from the comics,
It is just really an ugly game. I played through it and had no fun with it. I could at least easily put it into the test mode, and so I just had unlimited lives. And the end level like is a wannabe, the clock's ticking down. It's like, Metroid, get out of here. And it's like, this sucks. It's no fun. Swinging through this, you're indoors web swinging, and then you're like, I hit another wall. Climb down. Web swing, hit another wall. Oh, this sucks. No fun.
That sounds very tedious.
And this would be the last Spider-Man game until Activision's and Neversoft's Spider-Man.
So what, 3 or 4 years off?
It would be 3 or 4 years away, and I believe it's
because this game is so bad, they would just like let the corpse cool for a bit.
Well, actually, I this is an assumption I'm making, but I base it on the massive research I did for the Spider-Man movie history. From 1996 to 1999, there was no real progress on making a Spider-Man movie because Marvel was bankrupt. And I think it was preventing them from making any deals because they didn't know who was technically in charge of Marvel to make deals. So I wouldn't be surprised if it was just for 3 years they couldn't make a deal with any publisher to make a game because they didn't know who was in charge of Marvel. So
that makes sense.
That is my new reasoning for why I think there was a lull of Spider-Man games.
I totally buy that theory.
But so yeah, a very sad way to end Spider-Man's big time as a video game icon, even, and at least for Sega, with Tangled Web, and a game that like 8 people bought on a 32X. Barf.
So I guess we have one final question that Henry wants to ask us. Go ahead, Henry. I want you to be the one who does this. You put together all these notes.
I'm so bashful. I mean, what was your favorite Spider-Man game of this era? Like, which one did you play? The arcade one was my favorite. It's my favorite to go back to just because it is the simplest and the art is so gorgeous and it's just very like straightforward in what is fun about Spider-Man. The Genesis one, I do love its ambition, but it's harder to go back to now. It's kind of needlessly complicated in some ways.
I'm going to go with this is totally unfair because it's the one I like the most, but it's not really that Spider-Man related. I think I like the first Marvel vs. Capcom the best.
Oh, yeah.
I'm not a fighting game fanatic. I know there are better fighting games. You probably like 2 more. You probably like 3 better. But I like 1 because of how much personality it had for each character. Like each character had their own theme, their own stage. And I did play a Spider-Man in this game. So it may be cheating a bit, but that's my favorite Spider-Man game, MVC 1.
Yeah, until Spider-Man will eventually come back and bring the Imperfects with him. And shout out to my Imperfects fans. So if we're just looking at this era, I'd agree with you. The arcade game, I think, is the most fun to play. But very similar to your answer, Henry. Like, I like that Genesis game. I played it a lot when I was younger. But I think that the arcade game, like, I'm always happy to play it. When Ground Control got it, I flipped. Like, I was just like, oh, this is so good. Because there's only so many times you can beat Sunset Riders. And that number is 3. And once you get to it, it's like, well, I've seen the bury with me with my money kind of thing.
I've reached my max lifetime playthroughs of Sunset Riders.
Yes.
But not Wild Guns. So look out.
And the rarity and makes it more special too. You never got to play it on XBLA or PSN, you know?
Jeremy.
Without a question, 100% Bionic Commando for NES.
Right. I guess it is secretly the best Spider-Man game.
I don't actually like any of these games. Honest. I played a bunch of them and...
Those big white bullets are just spider globs, right?
Yeah,
and the bionic arm is a spider arm. Mm-hmm. Let's make this work,
Spider-Man
people.
Spider-Man has a no-kill policy, even on the
Hitler.
Reanimated head of Hitler.
You're taking on like the neo-Nazis, which is Hydra. So there you go.
I've never seen –
Dissolve Hitler in acid.
Spider-Man's fought tons of Nazis. He's not killed any of them.
Yeah, let's make this a call to action to our listeners. Make Jeremy a Bionic Commando ROM hack that turns him into Spider-Man and he'll be happy. That'll be the one Spider-Man game he will like.
I would – Yes.
It's you'll amazing play that? That doesn't
that'd be,
exist.
That'd be heroic.
I bet it does. I bet someone tried it. It seems so obvious.
It's very strange.
I have a whole bunch of ROM hacks for Bionic Commando. I've never seen
that. Four of us didn't come up with that connection before this moment, the Bionic Commando and the Spider-Man thing.
Bob kind of did
in the beginning when he
made a joke about my Spider-Man toy as a kid.
Yeah.
Mm. Well, I mean, I feel like that was the genesis of it. I'm just kind of surprised I hadn't seen that before.
Mm-hmm. It turns out there is not a ROM hack for this, so you have to go out and make it. But I do want to wrap up here. Thank you so much, Henry.
I will offer a special prize to whoever makes this ROM hack. If you can make a nice-looking Spider-Man ROM hack for Bionic Commando, you just got to replace like Master D with Master D, Doc Octopus. Yeah, there you go. And maybe do something about the exploding head. I don't know. That's not really Spider-Man.
You will get a Parish No Prize.
Yeah.
Hey, everybody, I get that reference.
Yeah, Dan,
give me your respect.
Right on.
You graduated, Bob.
Yeah, I did it. Thank you. Thank you so much for listening. And special thanks to Henry for doing my work for me and doing a great job. All these notes, like introducing me to the world of Spider-Man and being patient with me as I am an ignoramus who knows nothing of the world of spiders or men.
Well, I hope I've taught you something. And I look forward to someday doing a sequel of this to talk about the polygamy. Spidey era.
There's so much to talk about, and let us know if you like this and let us know if you want a sequel. I bet the answer will be yes.
I think there's also room for a spin-off talking about the Versus games.
Oh, totally.
Oh, yeah. I mean, we can do so many superhero topics, and if you want to hear more, go back to our episodes with Chris Baker. We talk about a lot of early superhero games. Those are great, too.
And also some of the Retronauts East episodes with Chris Sims. So far, we've just talked about Batman, but... Mm-hmm. I'm sure there's going to be like some sort of he keeps saying like, oh, I'd love to do an episode on this. Henry and Bob already kind of touched on that one. So.
We stole fire.
We need to do a Worlds Collide thing, I think.
Yeah.
East-West rivalry.
So to wrap up, I have one question for our listeners. Did you hear ads in this episode? Do you hate them? Are you penning an angry message to me right now? Well, stop what you're doing, because for $3 a month, I'll make it better, $3 a month, if you give that to the Retronauts Patreon at patreon.com/retronauts, you'll get all of our podcasts a week ahead of time with no ads at a higher bit rate. That is a great deal, and that will help us a lot. It's how we run the show. It's how Jeremy flies out here. It's how we get guests on the show. We pay for their transit. We pay for snacks. You help this make this show happen, and if you want to help out, even $1 a month would be amazing. So go to patreon.com/retronauts to help out. We have some incentives for you, so please check those out. And as for me, I've been on this podcast for a while now. My name is Bob Mackey. You can find me on Twitter as Bob Servo, and I'll let Henry talk about the other fun stuff we do and stuff that also has a Patreon attached to it.
Bob and I do Talking Simpsons, where we go through every episode of The Simpsons from the beginning chronologically and chat about them for 90 minutes straight sometimes, and we have a ton of fun going through Simpsons history and explaining every reference and including discovering stuff like, oh, that was a reference to that, and that is supported on patreon.com/talkingsimpsons, where you can listen to a podcast a week early, and there's tons of exclusive there too. Bob and I are, well, I guess at least in season 6 now when this episode goes out, but just go through them on all your podcast listening devices too and give it a sample. We also do Talking Critic on there.
Oh, yeah.
And hopefully we'll do a talking thing for every cartoon ever someday.
Hachi Machi.
Gary, where can we find you and what do you do?
Yeah, Gary Butterfield of the Duckfeed TV Podcast Network. You can find us at duckfeed.tv. We do a games club podcast that's been running for about 6 years now, where we take a game, talk about it like a book club. We also have a Patreon. I understand Patreon is what we have instead of universal healthcare now, so you're going to hear about a lot of them. But patreon.com/duckfeedtv. Love it if you gave the episodes a shot, and we do a bunch of other stuff on that network. So if you like that, you might like the other shows. You can also find me on Twitter at GaryBuh, GaryBuh.
Well, and Jeremy.
And this is what I do, Retronauts. You can find me at Retronauts.com or on Twitter as GameSpite. I've got various projects like NES Works and Game Boy Works, where I go through and play terrible games about Spider-Man and Hate Life. It's great. So please check those out. Check out the website, Retronauts.com, because it's a real website now. It graduated from blog to website.
It looks great.
And we have some great people writing for it, Kim Justice and Kishi, and a fellow named GSK. So they all have different areas of obscure expertise that nicely balance my boring mainstream appeal. So come on over, read it. It'll make you smarter.
Awesome. Thank you so much for listening. We'll be back next week with a brand new episode of Retronauts, and we'll see you then.
The Mueller Report. I'm Ed Donahue with an AP News Minute. President Trump was asked at the White House if Special Counsel Robert Mueller's Russia investigation report should be released next week when he will be out of town.
I guess from what I understand, that will be totally up to the Attorney General.
Maine's Susan Collins says she would vote for a congressional resolution disapproving of President Trump's emergency declaration to build a border wall, becoming the first Republican senator to publicly back it. In New York, the wounded supervisor of a police detective killed by friendly fire was among the mourners attending his funeral. Detective Brian Simonson was killed as officers started shooting at a robbery suspect last week. Commissioner James O'Neill was among the speakers today at Simonson's funeral.
It's a tremendous weight to bear, knowing that your choices will directly affect the lives of others. But cops like Brian don't shy away from it. It's the very foundation of who they are and what they do.
The robbery suspect and a man police say acted as his lookout have been charged with murder. I'm Ed Donahue.